in our spiritual efforts. And I began to have build a construction on the equation which said achievement is equal to abilities plus motivation. Now after the class was over, there were some questions, and one of the brothers asked, what is the purpose, what is the difference between purpose and motivation? The purpose or the aim and object appears to be the same as motivation. But this very equation, achievement is equal to abilities plus motivation, shows that achievement is the purpose. Achievement is the aim and object. Motivation is the arousal of the interest to achieve that purpose. So purpose is the goal. It signifies the final aim, the end result, what we want to achieve. This is signified by the word achievement. And for achieving our purpose, we make use of our abilities, acquired as well as inherent, and we also need be motivated. But then a question may arise, what is the difference between motivation and interest, or motive and interest? Take the case of a person who is playing a piano, a pianist. Now there are people who are interested in a particular performance, and his motive is to earn money. He therefore plays that very thing which the people like very much. But as a professional, as someone who deeply knows this art, he himself is not interested in playing it, because he thinks that this is lower as compared to another one in which he has deeper interest. If he would like to play it for himself, he would be interested in something different than he is giving to the public. So he is giving to the public because his motive is to earn money, but his interest is in a different kind of performance. So interest may not always be the same as motivation. In some certain cases it may be, while in other cases it may not be. It may clash with it. But even though I make these minor differences, they are generally synonymous, they are generally used one for the other, and there is razor edge difference between these various terms. But I would like to say that motives or motivation are closer to human nature. We want to express our consciousness in certain ways, and our motives release energy for those purposes. That was the main aim behind it. Now today I would take this topic further and give you some versions from Baba's Avyakt Vanis, Avyakt Murlis, how he tries to transform our motives and how he tries to motivate us to achieve our final goal, our highest stage, the stage of perfection, which we sometimes say Lakshmi and Narayan, as was being said in this morning's Murli. When Baba asked from one of the sisters in the class as to what fortune or what luck she was making, or what were her efforts directed to, and she was not able to answer in the form in which Baba wanted. And Baba said this picture of Lakshmi and Narayan is the symbol of what you are trying to be in your future life. So sometimes we say this. At another time we say that the goal of our present life is to have the angelic stage. So anyone who has got the angelic stage in this life will naturally be attaining that deity status in the future. These are just, two sides of the same coin. If you attain the one, the other will naturally be attained. Now the first thing is that Baba wants to motivate us for a change, that whatever motives there are in our mind for the realization of which we have been trying our hard, our very best in this life, they should now be given a turn. There should be transformation. And I would read Baba's original versions. It's very difficult to translate them in English, but I will try my best to do it. And I think he, first of all, I will give you the number of ways which I think he uses to transform these motives. One way is that he tries to show that the form in which we are using our motives are inferior in result. What we are gaining, say for example, a person is trying to have name and fame in this world. He becomes a member of parliament, or he becomes a reputed author, an erudite scholar, a famous orator, or whatever. This is one of the motives of social recognition, having respect in the eye of the society. Now, Baba would try to show that what you are trying to attain is very transitory. This world in itself is going to be destroyed soon. And it's not that you will be gaining something for quite some time, for a long period. So the result of your efforts will lead you to a goal which is much inferior. If you change this motive in another direction, you would be having much higher result. This is one of the ways he tries to change the motives and tries to make us pure because our motives are changed. And in doing this, the second is that he not only asks us not to do this, but he also gives us the alternative. Then what to do? He wants us to replace these by others which are better, which are superior. Now, if we do not want name and fame, suppose someone wants to become famous. Now, Baba says, how you can become famous? Not that to have fame is something wrong. Alright, even if you want to have fame, if fame is the goal of your life or the ambition of your life or what you desire, and all your actions are motivated by this desire, then he would say Pandavas are most famous. Shiv Shaktis are most famous. No one is as famous as these. They are mentioned in almost every scripture. Their idols are worshipped in temples. The idols of others are not worshipped. He would classify them into various categories, saying that some are adored. People sing about them. Gayan Yog. Others are Pujan Yog, worship worthy. And you will become so famous that you will not only be famous, but you will be adored. There will be songs about you in your memory, life after life, and in scriptures, which will be considered sacred, held high in a person's esteem. And not only that, you will become worship worthy. Not only will you become worship worthy, but you will be worshipped even more than Shiv Baba. He says, you children are double worship worthy. Baba is single worship worthy, he says. Because you are worship worthy in your corporeal form, as Lakshmi Narayan, and also in your incorporeal form, as Saligrams. So on and so forth, he would try to motivate us to arouse our interest, deep interest, for attaining such a stage. Alright, if you want to attain name and fame, do this. And this, he says, you will do by giving up the desire for name and fame. Just see his trick. He asks us to attain name and fame by giving up the name and fame. Become zero. Then you will become hero. He says there is no wrong in trying to become hero. Alright, become hero. And become hero like this. One who has got all the qualities, the virtues, who is higher in life, worship worthy. And this you can become, he says, by becoming zero. Have humility. So all these versions I will read from his Avyaktvani, then you will find that what he is trying to do is to motivate us for a higher, nobler goal, nobler purpose. And he is not trying to ask us to eliminate all these, but to sublimate these. He replaces them by certain higher goals. Now this is the second one. And then sometimes he gives us a picture, a model, a paradigm, an image which fulfills all the motives. All are encompassed into it, included into it. It is all inclusive. Alright, you want name and fame, but you don't have wealth. You have wealth, But people say you are a man of bad character. You have wealth, but you are not a good character. You have wealth and you have good character, but your health is not good. You can't eat properly. You don't enjoy your food. Your health is an obstacle in your happiness. All right, you have good health also, but your friends and your relatives don't behave properly with you. They are pinpricks. So, your neighbor is a problem to you. Therefore, it has been said in the Bible, you see, how to behave with your neighbor. Perhaps it has been a problem since that times, that some neighbors have not been good to their neighbors. So, if you tell a goal, whereby you can attain all this, an ideal society, an ideal environment, an ideal health, wealth, so that you are not scared of the tax authorities by the laws of the government, or by the changes in the political system, so that tomorrow you are asked to leave the country with all the baggage and baggage, not even the bag and baggage, leaving bag and baggage also there. So, these things may happen. You try your best and you spend your time, money and energy to earn money because your motive was that. And a law is passed that you leave the country and whatever you earned, you have to leave it behind you. So, he tells us in such a way, what is the nature of this world, this iron-edged world, and what our efforts ultimately lead us to. That the end is always sufferings in this world. And even if there is happiness, even if there is some gain, some achievement, it is very, very short-lived. And not only is it short-lived, it is only a very small fraction of what we want. It just fulfills only a very small part of it. Only one aspect of it. And that also not fully. Because even you will find whatever gives happiness to us, it carries along with it a bit of suffering. The wealth you earn, you accumulate, you don't accumulate it easily. In this world, it's very difficult to amass wealth. In golden age, it's not. Even to raise a good crop, so much has to be done because the land has to be tilled. And not only has the land to be tilled, so many fertilizers have to be used because the land has now lost its strength. It does not give that good crop. So many other pains have to be taken. It is a painful process to earn money. And you earn money which you do not all use for yourself. And then you have children, you think that they will be your successors. Alright, you sow the trees which will grow after you, your life is over. You will not be able to cherish their mangoes. But you think that your children will, or grandchildren will. But the children themselves are of such nature that instead of giving you some happiness in your old age, they are a problem to you. Problem child. Sir John Dewey has little problem child, problem parent. Everyone is a problem in this world. Not only have the problems been created by the modern developments of science, but everyone is a problem to everyone else. Such is the nature of this world. So Baba tells us, what you are trying for? All your motives, all your energy being released, all the effort you are making, all the abilities you are doing, just try to see what is the achievement. After all, this is hell. The world in which you are sitting is hell. You are not in golden age palaces. You are not, tell me of a single person who is healthy, even for 10 years, maybe even for 1 year, completely healthy. The environment is so polluted, the food is so polluted, the thoughts are so polluted, the relations are so polluted. Everything is so polluted and also diluted. It does not have the essence. Then the result is that there is no charm left in this life anymore. Such being the case, he tries to motivate us for gaining something. Not leaving everything, but he says if you just, in one of his versions which I will read hereafter, if you just make use of 1 rupee, now here we want to make investment. Suppose I have money. They say money begets money. I want to invest money to have interest, compound interest, or to have some shares, so that I can make some more money. Or I open a factory, I run a factory, so that I can mint some more money. Money through money. One of the ways of earning money. But he says, I tell you the way. Whereby, if you just make a small investment, how much you can get. So he is not even against making money, but how to make the best money, which can be a source of happiness to us, rather than a source of discomfort or problem to us, he tells us. Here lies the charm in this knowledge, so that we become happy. That he enlightens us on every issue. Motives, let there be. But let those motives be sublimated, only transformed. That is what it does. So, what I was saying was that the third method he adopts is, he gives us such ideals, such goals, such inspiring and attractive pictures, which are all encompassing, all inclusive, in which all our motives can be fulfilled. Motive of mastery, motive of this, motive of that, whatever are the motives. They all get fulfilled through one effort. Separate efforts have not to be made. And then sometimes another way, method he adopts is to defer some motives for further fulfillment. Now, take for example, a person wants to marry. Even this happens even in this world. A person wants to marry, but he thinks that he would do so only after writing a book. He is more interested in writing a book because he thinks that if he gets married, then he may not find more time. And this project may not be fulfilled. And therefore, he defers this for doing this. He thinks he is motivated in, he has both these motives. But he defers one motive by trying to fulfill the other, writing the book. Similarly, you would find that through some of the versions which Baba gives, he enables us to have a better motive realized by deferring the ignoble, the non-sanguine, or you can say the lower motives. And thereby they die of their own death because of disuse. Sometimes it so happens that if you don't use something, some ability even, suppose someone learned typewriting. If one does not type, say, for 20 years, forgets automatically. You need not make an effort to forget. Just as you make an effort to forget some sanskaras. But certain things die of disuse because you don't make any use of them. So by deferring certain sanskaras and certain motives and paying your attention to some other motives, what happens is that those motives which you don't want, they get disused and ultimately they die their natural death. And then sometimes he gives, if the two motives are good, but alone they are bad, sometimes they become bad in their extreme. He asks us to balance the two. Then that is the importance of balances, which Baba mentions. This kind of balance, that kind of balance, which we will discuss one day. So this is another way he adopts for sublimating of the motives. Then he also tells us often how the use of certain motives on our part harms the public interest. It causes harm to others. And he appeals to our sense and tells us, na dukh do, na dukh lo. If you cause suffering to others through the play of your motives, then mind you, you will also suffer. The action will rebound on you. So he rationally tries to explain how by bringing certain motives into play, we will be causing suffering to others as well as to ourselves immediately and also as a result of causing suffering to others. Therefore, he gives us the motto, na dukh do, na dukh lo. This is a very pithy sentence, very good statement if you just try to analyze it, na dukh do, na dukh lo. The whole philosophy of life is built on this. You need not, have any other guiding factor. Just keep this in mind, whatever you do, na dukh do, na dukh lo. Any person who becomes angry at that very instant feels that the peace is missing. He loses his peace, which means he causes suffering to himself. And anger, because of anger, so many glands they secrete, and the result is a bodily harm to our nervous system, to all our body parts. So we are causing pain to ourselves by being angry, and by speaking in a bitter tone, harsh tone, we are causing mental agony, mental suffering to others. So even if we keep this one single sentence Baba has given so beautifully, because take the case of the biblical quotation, this one from the New Testament, when Christ said, if a person slaps on one of your cheeks, put your other into him. Why should we? He has already slapped one of our cheeks, and we should put the other into him. The result would be that we have already suffered, and we suffer more. This is not the, now, it looks as if it is very saintly saying. It is. As compared to those who advocate violence. And I found that at least one third or about one third of Baba's Murlis, whether they be Avyaktvanis or the Sakar Murlis, they are devoted to motivate or to sustain our motivation. And when I went deeper into it, I found that the difference between the stage of one person and the other, I mean the spiritual stage, also is mainly or greatly to this one important factor, namely motives. Whatever action we do, we have some motive behind it. Even when we practice meditation, when we attend our daily classes, when we listen to Baba's Murlis, all our spiritual efforts, by whatever name we may call them, have some motives behind them. And when I use this word motive, I do not mean in the negative sense, suspective motives or foul motives or lower motives, but motives in general. And partly they also include our interests. But I would mainly refer to our basic motives. Our interests also are derived from our motives. Motives are deeper than the interests. They find their manifestation in the form of interests. Sometimes we say, I am not interested in this. Why I am not interested in this? If you just try to analyze this statement, you will find that there is a motive underneath it, which perhaps will not be fulfilled if I do this. Therefore, I say I am not interested in this. And when I say I am interested in this, certainly there is a motive underneath it, and I find that this will be fulfilled if I do this. So again, there is a motive. Even if I do service, there is a motive behind it. Maybe it is simple. It is the glorification of Baba. It's very divine, very sublime, very pure thought. Or maybe it's for my own personal glorification. Maybe I want to play to the gallery, to the grandstand. Instead of doing the teamwork, I want to win some personal laurels. My motive may be that. So, there is difference between one person and another person doing the same act. And this difference sometimes or often is due to motives. And what the churning on motives was, I would just now share with you. I found that when we come to this institution, we are first of all motivated. Our lessons start with motivation towards a particular goal. We already are trying to attain happiness or health or some status or some wealth in this world. But we are told that there are some nobler aims, some higher goals, which can enable us to attain this for a longer period or for say 2500 years or more, and that our motives, even the worldly motives, even the grass motives will be better fulfilled if we get this education. So when we find that our motives will be better fulfilled by being yogis, by attaining purity in our life, and by making spiritual efforts, it is only then that we begin to make sincere efforts. Unless and until a person is properly motivated, he does not come to our classes daily. And I think actually it is not his fault. We very often ask a brother or a sister, why you don't come to the class daily? Baba is giving us very wonderful murlis and you are losing time. Time left is very short and so high is the goal. It requires some time to attain that goal. And she or he may express that there are some difficulties, some circumstances are like that. I think those circumstances or difficulties can be overcome by that person if he or she is properly motivated. If he or she thinks that the circumstances are nothing as compared to what he or she will be gaining by making this effort, then those difficulties or circumstances will not be any obstacles. And if some people have been coming in this gyan for quite some time, say for some years, and even then they give up this knowledge and become laukik, again, they met Baba, they listened to Baba's murlis, Baba gave them some inspiring words, gave them blessings, but after some time we find them no more. I think it is because the worldly motives have dragged them to themselves. And somehow, due to some reasons, this motivation has become lower in strength. It has no more been inspiring. This has lost some kind of an attraction for them. So I think we better focus our attention on this aspect of Baba's spiritual knowledge. It is useful for us and it is useful for service. If we are not making efforts as we should or as Baba expects of us, I think maybe because our motives are not unified. There may be conflict of motives. This is another problem. Sometimes we are not able to stabilize in meditation. We are not able to make strides in spiritual effort. I think it is because there is some conflict of motives. We want this, that and the other thing. Without rationalizing and unifying those motives, we find that there is some kind of an antagonism between these motives and we are not able to resolve them. And the result is that there is confusion and our time is wasted. So, this churning would mainly be just to show the importance of motivation in making our own efforts. If Dadiji or some senior sisters are far ahead of us, it's due to efforts. And you will find that these efforts, they differ between a person and a person because of motives. They are more motivated so that they can inspire us also. What is inspiration? Except that it is arousal of motivation. When I say that I have been inspired, what do I mean? It means I have been more strongly motivated. From Madhuban, I am going back to my place of work or my own country, getting deep inspiration, I say. What I mean is that now I am strongly motivated to make more sincere efforts. And what is an effort? Effort is just to overcome the obstacles in your way. You have a particular goal and in order to reach that goal, you have to do some action. And that action is to overcome the obstacles in the way. Everyone is making some effort, doing some action. But why someone is able to achieve more than the other? It is because some are able to overcome the obstacles better and quicker. May those obstacles be their own mental creation, their own past sanskaras, their own past negative thoughts, their habits, but they are the obstacles. And those obstacles have to be overcome. Our spiritual effort, therefore, is overcoming the mental obstacles, the hurdles placed in our own way, leading towards our own goal. And therefore, Baba generally asks us, become Vighna Vinashak, the troubleshooter, one who can conquer the obstacles. This is a kind of a hurdle race and in this we have to score higher marks. And as I said, the higher and the more strong the motivation, the higher is our effort. Therefore, what is required is enthusiasm, zest, zestful spirit. And Baba's avyakt vanis, many of them have given us some wonderful points about that utsaha umang, that zest, enthusiasm, that never should we be disappointed or in a state of desperation or dejection, depression. And depression is lack or absence of enthusiasm or zest. And enthusiasm or zest, if they are missing, is nothing but lack of proper motivation. And without zest and without enthusiasm, no higher goal can be achieved. Our effort will only be sadharan. It will be commonplace. It will not be of higher quality unless and until our efforts are high. And our efforts can be high only when our motivation is high. And this makes the difference between the stage, spiritual stage, yogic stage of one person and another. One is fired with enthusiasm. One is so deeply inspired. Some of the double foreigner sisters and brothers say intoxicated. What is that intoxication? It is the height of motivation. You feel totally your mind full with this motivation. And then only we can achieve this. Now, I start from this. My whole construction of what I am going to say will be proceeding step by step in this manner. I say we have to achieve a particular goal. So, I have in my mind an achievement. I start from this. I have a particular achievement to make. And I say that achievement is equal to my abilities and my motivation. Now, this is the equation on which I will be saying this evening. That achievement, my achievement is the stage of perfection. Or you can say the stage of Sri Lakshmi or Sri Narayan, in which I have complete purity, peace and prosperity, or health, wealth and happiness. So, I put all this and much more, what Baba has been saying in various murlis, just by giving to it one single word, achievement. Now, this achievement depends upon my abilities and my motivation. Now, I say there are two kinds of abilities. Acquired abilities and my innate abilities, my inherent abilities. Because I want to come into the first 8 or 108 or 16,108. Let me put it like this. I want to achieve that stage. This is the achievement in my mind. Now, two factors will be playing the important part. One is the abilities, the other is the motivation. And I say there are two kinds of abilities, acquired abilities and innate or my inherent, my natural, my original, you can say, abilities. Then, the acquired abilities in their turn again depend upon motivation. So, just think the importance of motivation. Even the abilities I acquire depends upon motivation. Take for example how easily I can establish myself in meditation. I want to acquire this ability. That the moment I switch on, the moment I am in seed stage, I want to have this ability. But this ability requires practice. And this practice requires sustained motivation. Without motivation, I cannot make sincere and sustained effort. And without effort, I cannot attain that facile, that easy stage of stabilization in meditation. So, this ability again depends upon motivation. Motivation in itself is a separate factor. Abilities is another factor. But look, abilities themselves depend upon motivation. So, motivation has double importance. More importance even than abilities. Because Baba says in one of the avyakt vanis, sadhan se siddhi hoti hai. He says you can attain something, you can achieve a goal, you can have the blessings by using some means, by acquiring some abilities. But these abilities themselves depend upon motivation, as I said. And now, look at the innate abilities, the inherent abilities. As I said, the abilities can be broken into two parts. Now, these innate or inherent abilities, many of the abilities look like inherent. But if you just go deeper down, you will find that all are not inherent. Only a very small core of them is inherent. Much of the abilities are in fact acquired. Now I started from some abilities when I was a small child. I will say that they were my inherent abilities. The other ones I acquired later in my this life. I will say no. Because some of the abilities which I have since my very childhood, they were perhaps acquired in my past life. Or maybe in the still preceding life. So many of the abilities are acquired. And those acquired abilities, as I said, depend upon motivation. And you can acquire them if you don't have them. Provided you are properly motivated. So there is a bright chance of attaining or achieving my goal of having a seat among those 108, provided I am properly motivated. And if I am not motivated, if I don't have enthusiasm, if I don't have zest, if I am not inspired, if I am not intoxicated, I don't make sincere efforts and I naturally cannot achieve. Now, someone may say here, well, Jagdish bhai, there is another factor. You are missing that factor out of these. And that is chance or luck. Fortune. We always say it is my great fortune. Then what is fortune? You are emphasizing only the effort aspect of it or the abilities and motivation. But what about the luck factor or the chance factor? I personally feel from my observation that very often there is chance in most of the people's life. But they are not able to make best of the chance because of lack of abilities and lack of motivation. Chance comes. It knocks at our door. Even Baba, when we meet Baba, he gives us some inspiration and asks us to do this, to do that. And he says, we can become this, we can become that. There is a great hope he places on us. We are expected to do wonders. But we don't trust him at his words, or we don't trust in our abilities, we don't make efforts, because we are not properly motivated. So I think chance factor also. Or even if there is a chance, it depends upon my past effort. Suppose a chance presents in my case as it is not in others' cases. Alright. Then why, after all, there is no injustice. There is no effect without a cause. If there is a chance in my life, rather than in any other's life, it must be because I made some efforts in my past so that I deserve this to happen in my case. So then again it depends upon my past efforts. And those past efforts again depend upon my motivation and my abilities. So ultimately you will find that motivation is one of the basic factors which takes me either to the top or keeps me low. And therefore I say achievement depends upon abilities and motivation, and abilities in their own turn to a great extent, except the very small core of the innate, the inherent abilities, much part of it depends upon our motivation. So this is the importance of motivation. Now, again, both the abilities, all my abilities and all my efforts, are again influenced by my motivation. What do I mean by this? Now suppose there is a chance to do some service. I am arranging a proper function, some kind of a conference, you can say. Now this effort, I use all my abilities, the organizing ability, the administrating ability, just having unity among all, and that I go into the details of it, allot proper duties to proper persons, and all these so that the result may be as we wish, as everyone expects. But if at the same time my motive is not genuine in the sense, it's not glorification of Baba, or that all may have the benefit, that there may be some new souls which come to this Gyan, they also inherit Baba's eternal qualities. If that is not the purpose, not the motive, then what happens is that I made all efforts, I did not have proper sleep during the nights, I used much of my energy, but the net result would be that in Baba's books, the total result of my actions would not lead me to a higher state spiritually. Or ultimately, I will not gain as much as I should have if my motive should have been as Baba wants us to have. As I said that much of Baba's points in Murli's tell us of motivation. I will come to that also. How daily when you just read or when you listen to Baba's Murli, you will find that 10, 20, 50 sentences, statements will be about motivation. For example, Shubh Bhavna, Shubh Kamna. Even to the leaders, political leaders, the message which was sent this year and last year, asked them to have this Shubh Bhavna and Shubh Kamna. That they are making sincere efforts, but if they make the effort with this purpose, with this motive, then they will achieve better success. So, this is very important. So, what I was saying was that the net achievement of those efforts also will be dependent upon my motivation. Yeah, that we should have good wishes for all. And we should think for the best of all. If we have some personal motive to be fulfilled, then because the political leaders, the social leaders, the reformers, those who are trying to help mankind in various ways, they are busy day and night doing service. They also do service. But the motive being not to give benefit to the people, the motive being that they want their own social recognition or name and fame or some status or some money or whatever, then the result is that the people do not get the benefit, even if they have the aim of giving it to the people. Now, when we make some efforts in order to achieve some goal, one of the important factors is the will, willpower. If our willpower is strong, we are in a better position to overcome the obstacles in our way, to go on without stopping towards our goal. And we can have faster speed. Because always the obstacles would be there. It's a law of physics. The more rapidly we run, the resistance of air opposes us with the proportionate strength. The friction also increases. Other factors opposing us, they always come into play. So happens in this spiritual race. They do come. But it all depends upon our willpower. Now what is willpower? When we say, this is one of the powers which we attain by means of meditation, and this is very important, very crucial to our achievement, what is willpower? I would say that everyone can have a strong willpower. And actually everyone basically has strong willpower. But at a particular point of time, if a person does not seem to be using his willpower or having the willpower, I think the reason is that there is conflict of motives in his mind. You will find that in some case we find that this person has a willpower. It is because the goal is very clear in his mind and he is fired with that single motivation. His mind is not a divided house fighting against each other. Therefore, we come to this conclusion that our motive releases the energy. It is this which opens all the gates of our attention so that we can focus at a particular point. If our motives are many and there is no unity among themselves, then what happens is there are blockages. Some of the sluices are there, some of the gates have been closed. There is no flow of energy and there is no single-minded or unified attention. The result is that there is no willpower also. And then again the achievement is that much less. So even if someone feels that he or she is not able to attain the goal or achieve as much as Baba expects, and this is due to the lack of willpower, I think if we just try to take notice of it, this lack of willpower is also due to conflict of motives. Maybe we want to attain some money, and maybe we want to therefore spend more time on that, and we want to spend less time on this. Similarly, you will find that there must be conflict between the laukic and the alaukic motives, or even between the laukic motives or alaukic motives. So, it is always the conflict which leads to making willpower, weaker. And even in meditation, if we are not able to stabilize our mind in seed state, or stabilize our mind in our original real state of peace and of purity, so that we don't feel that we are being charged with that high flow of light and might, that we are completely withdrawn from body and we have become double light. If that stage is beyond us, we cannot reach it, and we find that our mind is scattered, goes this way, that way, in this direction and the other direction. There are many distractions. You will find it is because of various motives. Why my mind is being pulled in this direction and not in Baba's direction? It is because I have some other motive to fulfill. And therefore, my motive is not sustained. As yet, I have not been able to satisfy my mind that when I meditate, what I will be gaining through meditation will be consisting of all the other achievements which I can have through the fulfillment of all the other motives. If I know that this one single effort can give me so much that all my needs, my requirements, my interests will be fulfilled, then my mind will be focused and there will be concentration. And as good, as perfect the concentration, as perfectly will I be able to have that seed state. So then again, there is equal need of motivation. I remember that Baba very often said that when a person first comes to this institution, you give him some introductory form to be filled up. And then you give him some temptation. Generally, he used the word temptation, which by this he actually used to imply that that person must be motivated. Now, maybe some people want mukti, that is just the stage of liberation, going to the sweet world, sweet home, and their aim is not jivan mukti, that stage of fruition or blessedness, that golden age stage of deityhood. Someone does not consider that as the higher stage, but thinks that attainment of redemption or liberation, going to the soul world and being free from all actions, all bondages, is the higher stage. And that is the motivation, that is the motive behind that efforts. And I try to motivate him towards jivan mukti at that point of time. That person may not become a student. May think that Lakshmi and Narayana which we show are the paradise or heaven of which we have the pictures. They do not fascinate him. They do not fulfill his motive. So the result would be that that person would not be able to inherit Baba's inheritance. So what we have to keep in mind, Baba has been saying very often, is that alright, we have both mukti and jivan mukti. You just keep in mind what is the motive of this person. And the first thing is to tell that person that this motive can be realized by practicing meditation. Alright, if you don't want jivan mukti, you want mukti, this institution tells the way for both, for mukti and jivan mukti. You may have so many things to sell. It depends upon the customer what he wants to purchase. So if this person is more interested in this, why you insist upon ask him to have the other? Let him first come. Let him just practice meditation. And when this person gets peace, bliss, a relaxed state of mind, better efficiency, transformation of habits, so on and so forth, he by coming closer, after all, there are innate abilities in everyone. A time will come, as you have changed, he will also change and say that he would like to have jivan mukti also. So, even in imparting this education to others, we have to keep in mind what is the motive of someone else and how we should properly motivate that person. And I would say, the very behavior, when we object about someone's behavior, that his behavior is not proper. We live a social life. We live in families. And in this bigger spiritual family, Baba's family. And we have to come in contact with others even in the field of service. Why we sometimes feel that someone's behavior is not as it should be, according to Baba's Shrimat or Baba's Mullis, that behavior also you will find is because the underlying motives behind the action of a particular person are different than what Baba wants us to have. So our very behavior, our very lifestyle is because of certain motives. So therefore also we must give some attention to this. And I would say that the six evils, the six main evils, sex lust, anger, greed, attachment, pride, and this laziness and all that, even these are perverted motives. If you just find that if our motives are in right direction, they are in right form, even these will cease to be. They also are there because, now for example, why is anger due to? What is anger due to? I think it is because when some of our motives are thwarted, they are not fulfilled, then anger is aroused. We want to achieve something, we are motivated to attain something, there is an obstacle, someone is putting some obstacles, and I become angry. So what is anger born from? It is because a particular motive is threatened. Similarly, what is rivalry? I want to attain a motive, another one also wants to attain a motive. And you should know that mastery is one of the motives, mastery motive. I would just be coming to what motives, what are the basic motives. One of the basic motives is the mastery motive. That each one of us wants to attain mastery, victory, to have a dominant position. Now, whether we want to have mastery over our own self, over our sense organs, or we want to attain mastery over others with whom I meet, that mastery may be misplaced. I may be misusing that basic motive. But everyone wants some kind of mastery. Now, this mastery motive, if it is thwarted, if it is not fulfilled, there may be anger. And some people even say that there are two motives, mastery motive and motive of submission. We also want to submit. And some have even said that even sex is due to these two motives. On the part of one of the partners, it is mastery motive, and on the part of the other is the submission motive. Without these two motives, there could not be this kind of perverse or degenerated or debased relationship either. So I was saying that even these, outwardly it would seem that my greed is for money. But I think it is not actually for money. Because all the money a person has in banks or in lockers, in cash or in kind, all the wealth, the material, prosperity which one has, which one makes efforts all through his life to achieve, is not being used by that person. Much of it is lying in lockers or banks or in the house, wherever. He uses only a very small part of it. So, is it that man does not think that he is using much of his energy and time and ability to earn money, money and money, day and night? He is worried. And he will not be able to use. Does he not see this? I think he sees this. He is aware of this. But since this money gives him some social recognition, some status, some power in life, so I think money is not, the greed is not only for the money. So even this greed is because of some other motives. The motive is that wherever he goes, if he has got some big house and a number of servants and a particular, it will give him some kind of respectability. If he gives some donations to various institutions and monetarily he becomes a wealthy man, he runs a multinational firm and people know, read his name so that they would think that he is a very wealthy person. Wherever he goes, he will have some kind of a respect. So maybe the motive is for respect, for recognition, for social status, for it gives him some more prestige. It gives him some power because through money he can do so many other things. So you will find that even the vices, the evils, have some underlying debased or degenerated motives. Unless and until you correct those motives, these vices cannot be eliminated. However hard you may try. Why is it that someone is not able to give up sex? Because he does not understand what is the motive lying underneath it. Why is someone not able to give greed? He knows that there is no need of, having more money. He already has enough. Take the case of even Baba. When we read Baba's biography, someone has said that Baba had enough money. And maybe a number of years earlier, he could have devoted his whole life to this spiritual effort. But he was earning more money. He had some contacts with the royal houses. And he was very well known among the jewelers. He was well respected among the Sindhi community. And one of the basic reasons was that he had lot of money. And his business was a top grade business. He was known as a merchant prince, so to say. And very often I listen Baba saying that Baba was known as Khidarpur ka Nawab. In Bengal side there is a place known as Khidarpur. It's a city. And Khidarpur is known for diamond trade. And he was known as Nawab, as the king, as the prince in that trade. In the very city where the main business was jewelry. So, Baba's wife used to say, Baba, we have enough money. Now let us go to Haridwar, let us go to some sacred place, and let us go to retreats, and have some, devote more time to, for the spiritual effort. But Baba would say, wait for some more time. And after that we will do it. And there was another motive perhaps, because Baba's uncle used to give charity. He had some funds and Moolchand, Kaka Moolchand, Baba says, Kaka Moolchand was Baba's uncle. And he was known as very great philanthropist. And Baba used to help him in this. Because Baba himself was very generously disposed towards the poor, towards the needy. And he thought this is one of the religious and sacred acts to help people who are in need. And maybe he wanted to earn money because he wanted that he should give it to the poor people. Since it is through money he can help the poor. So it is one of the ways of doing some social service. So maybe that his effort to earn more money when he had so much of it already was not because of any greed. It was because he wanted to do some social service. And then again, if a person wants to do social service, whether the motive is really to do social service or to gain social recognition, it is very subtle. We have to find out what is our real motive. Unless and until we divinize and sublimate that motive, we are not going to be divinized. Outwardly it would seem that we are doing social service. Alright, we give this, that and the other thing to the poor people. And we call a photographer to have photographs and we give it to the newspaper. That we had this program and so many things were given to the poor people. So was our real motive to help the needy or was our real motive to have some publicity? What was the real motive? So motives are mixed up. And much of the confusion is because of these motives. And I was saying that many of the evils, all the evils, the six evils, Baba says, you see, the last Murli, 18th January, 1969. The last Murli. Some people generally have tried to see what the last statements of a prophet were. Because they think that there is a spiritual evolution in the case of every individual. I am not today what I was when I first came to this institution. Each one of us is making spiritual efforts. And we are trying to improve. Trying to be higher and higher in spiritual effort. So was with Sakar Baba also. Shiv Baba spoke through Sakar Baba. But Sakar Baba himself said that he is a student. And when Shiv Baba speaks through his mouth, he is the first to listen. Because there is very little distance between his mouth and ears. Less than any other listener, anyone among the audience. So he used to say that he is the first among the students. First among the audience. So, he himself was also a student and as student he was making efforts. And the last Vani, the last Murli, Baba says, Nirakari, Nirvikari and Nirahankari. He gave these three. I think the first perhaps is Nirakari. Have the incorporeal state. Withdraw from the body. Become soul conscious. So, these three words rhyme among themselves. Nirakari, the incorporeal state. Then, Nirvikari, which means completely viceless or pure, positively pure, and if you mention it by a negative word, viceless. And then, among the vices also, the foremost, the most important, which is to be eradicated, he said Nirankari, no ego, no pride, prideless. You should have humility. So, Nirakari, Nirvikari and Nirankari. And I think these three can be attained only if our motive is proper. How can we become soul conscious people unless or until we have been fired with this motive that this is the highest state, that this is what I want to attain. If we read the Gita, Baba is mentioning the 17th chapter and the 18th chapter. Now what is in the 18th chapter? Now in the 18th chapter, almost towards the end of it, when Arjuna has been listening to God's versions, his revelations, his beautiful, wonderful advice which he has been giving, the enlightenment which he has been bestowing on this subject, that subject and the other subject, the doubts which he has been removing. Now at the end of it, telling his state, what he has achieved after listening to God's so many discourses, 17 and coming to the end, as I said, 18, what is his state of mind? What is his reaction towards God's sermons? Arjuna says, Nashto Moha, all my doubts have gone, have vanished. Now, since it's the 18th chapter, we should ask each one of us from ourselves, whether all our doubts have gone. Now, what do you mean by doubts? Doubts not only about whether I am a soul or a body, or whether there is a soul world or there is not, or whether God is omnipresent or God is a point of light, or whether the cosmic cycle is billions of years and millions of years, or is only 5,000 solar years, not even light years. Now what it is, actually, these doubts have to be removed, no doubt. But even these doubts can be removed if my motive is to study this. Because by studying this, I want to attain something. If my motive is not to attain that thing, I am not going to study even this knowledge. And one of the things he said is that his doubts have been removed. This is one thing Arjuna said. Nashto Moha. Then he says, Smitir Labdha. Now, I can recall to my mind. I regain my consciousness. What I really am. That I am a soul. That I am a child of God. That soul world is my sweet home from where I came. That this world is like a drama where I have to play my part. That there is a future which awaits me and for which I must make sincere efforts. So all this, he says, now are completely set in his memory. So therefore they give him this mental set. So Nashto Moha, Smitir Labdha, which to them. So when I know their motive, and that motive is fulfilled, then I can also fulfill my motive. My motive is to give them godly service. Their motive is to get some social prestige and publicity. I fulfill their motive and try to fulfill my motive also. My motive is actually not my motive. As I said, I am not using it in the negative sense. But it is just to glorify Baba, to do some good to those people. But even this can be fulfilled if I try to fulfill their motive. So, we cannot do even service, as I said earlier, if we do not fulfill their motives. And we have to keep these in our mind. And I would say there are many motives which are basic and which are they work like drives. They take hold of the mind of man. They drag him in a particular direction. They are so strong, they make a person sentimental, emotional. One does not listen to any sensible thing if one is under the spell of a powerful motive. So strong it is. If you tell people that the destruction is going to come, they see. Can't they see? You see, so many people know. It has been published in so many periodicals, books, presented from the state and other mass media. People already know that so many weapons have been made and so powerful they are, that destruction is a must. But what is it that does not give them realization? Why does this thing not dawn on their mind, which even a simple person can understand? Why these intelligent persons who have got these doctorates from various universities, who handle the affairs of the state, who are considered to be very sensible persons, can't they understand this? They would be destroying their own country. But it is the motive which does not enable them to understand. Really, if you just go deeper into it, it is their motive. They have different motives. It is because there are some multinational firms which are building up, which are manufacturing weapons. They put pressure on them. The military leaders who want things to be directed in a particular way. The defense people, maybe the civilian side of the defense, the security, who